This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Okay, well, it is good to be with you here this afternoon. I'm just curious here. How many of you are involved in numbers, record-keeping numbers? And I kind of expected that. I mean, after all, who would come into a session like this if numbers weren't on your plate, right? I guess I'm just wondering, how many of you are in the trenches, kind of, so to speak, where daily part of your job is keeping track of stuff? Okay. Are some of you on boards, maybe, with board oversight or anything like that? A few of you? Okay. Well, as I was introduced, we have a 45-minute session here, and we can't create accountants in 45 minutes, nor would I be able to. And if I had 45 days, maybe we could get a little bit more in depth. But I've taught a lot of business finance classes already, and like I said, most of my adult life I've been in the finance accounting world. I guess the Lord would expect I'd know a little bit about it after this many years. So, whatever I've learned from others. And so today, I guess I'm simply looking at this and saying, what is it that I can share with a group of people who are out serving the Lord from the aspect of missions and ministry and those types of things? And I guess what was really, impressive to me, we've got, 1,800 people here today, and most of these breakouts have to do with how we can reach people and do all of those things that are really great things for the kingdom of God, and how, we can interact with other people and lead them to the Lord and to truths and to all of those things. And we need a lot of those kinds of people. We don't need as many people that do numbers, okay? And I think this is a testament to that. There's a small group here that represents kind of the keeping record, keeping numbers, and doing those things. But I'm glad that, if we reflect back on Jesus, at least he had Matthew. Now, I don't fully know what Matthew did. We don't have a lot of details about him. But there was something in him that the Lord seen, that Jesus saw that he could use. Even if he was a tax collector. We kind of assume he kept some records, and a few things like that. So, I guess that's kind of, for me, part of the vision here is that we don't need a lot of people keeping track of things, but we do need a few. And we need to look at it as it's our ministry. It's how we can contribute to the work of the Lord. I've been on a few very short-term mission trips, but I've found fulfillment in my own life in simply being involved in using the gifts that God gave me, which isn't going out and interacting with a lot of people. I don't know how it is for you, but a bunch of people make me tired. Give me a bunch of numbers. Okay, I'm fine with that. They don't make me tired, okay? So God made all of us different. And I guess that's kind of my heart today, is we don't have to be on the front lines. We don't have to have those great evangelistic type experiences out there. But the work that we do nonetheless is very important to the Lord. And so we want to do it, and we want to do it well. And I wasn't sure what to cover today. I do have a few things here, but I will put it this way. I think the most value would be is if you came here today with specific questions that you'd like to have answered, I hope to have a bit of time at the end where we can do that, if that makes sense. Also, I will just point out, I do have printouts of the PowerPoint. They will be handed out as you leave. So if you see it on the screen, you don't need to make a note. I do prefer to do them at the end, though, so that, people kind of follow along with what's up front rather than reading ahead. I'm sure you wouldn't really do that, but just in case. So this is kind of the tagline that was in your in the Reach handout here. We want to look at practical processes of record keeping. And also we want to talk about just some very basic, easy-to-understand definitions of, I'm going to call it accounting speak, words that accountants use a lot. I'd be curious in here, Are any of you like certified public accountants? Okay, that's fine. You're welcome here. And if I say things wrong, just put your hand up. I am not, okay? All of my adult life has been in private business, not in taking care of other people's records. So there's nothing wrong with that. I don't have a formal degree in it. It's just I love numbers and I've been doing it all my life. And I'll put it this way. I've observed that a lot of people out on the mission field, they go there, they kind of have an understanding of numbers and they do it for a while, but they're not necessarily accounting people. And that's fine. We need those people who are willing to simply say, this is kind of my work. Before I go there, though, I would just like to spend just a little bit of time in talking about, God's variety of people that he uses, and especially you think we're approaching about 8 billion people on the earth. We're one of those 8 billion today. And the Lord cares for each of us. He's made no two of us alike. And if you're a numbers person, you're in the minority, okay? You're in that minority that can kind of process things in a systematic way and kind of understand the flow of numbers, okay? So it's okay to be in the minority. God needed a few like that as well. Just a couple verses, I think, to me, that kind of support this idea. You know, for all 8 billion and those before and those until the Lord returns, God knows each of them individually. He has formed each of us, you know, even before we were born, he had a perfect purpose for us. And don't feel like the purpose he created for you in record keeping is any less important than any other calling that there could be out there. He can use all of us. He has a perfect plan for each of us. And again, this is a familiar passage here that I think we're all familiar with, that different gifts, but we can all serve the same Lord. As it points out here, the same Spirit, the Spirit of the Lord can empower each of us. So I want to go through and talk a little bit of the why on the record-keeping side. I want to cover a few of those things on why it's important that we keep, I'm going to say, good records, accurate records, why it's actually important. And you'll notice on the tagline, that was part of it here was the focus on the why. And I know it's easy, and I've experienced it on some of the mission boards that I've been a part of, where some people that are out in the mission field, they get very tired of keeping records. And so we want to talk about that balance to a certain degree here today as well. But we do need to understand the why in order to appreciate the value of the work that we do. And so we want to talk about that a little bit. First of all, I do think it's biblical. Keeping records is a biblical thing. And if we just think of a few examples that I have up here, I'm not aware that the Bible anywhere says, "Thou shalt keep records this way." Okay, I don't think there's anything quite like that. But we do have, and this is just a few examples, there's a lot of scripture that would point out that there's some element of record keeping that is probably a good thing. And there's a variety of accounts. I just have a few of them up here. You think of the account there in Matthew 20 of the 5 and the 2 and the 1 talents. And, you know, I don't know exactly how everything was done, but there was, I'd like to think, at least some kind of record keeping. Somebody knew that the 5 had gained 5 more, and the 2 had gained 2 more, and that the 1 hadn't gained, right? And so we kind of, exactly how that worked, I don't know. So we kind of get the idea there was some kind of records. We think of the tower builder in Luke 14, you know, considering the cost. And I don't want to take this out of context, but I do think it's scriptural that when we think of considering costs, it means planning, it means thinking about, it means keeping track of some things. It probably meant doing some estimates, so to speak, to figure out what something would cost before you do it. And so we see that even in that context, there was some kind of record keeping, providing for things honest. You know, I think we could say that we could be fair and we could be honest without keeping records. But keeping records is a way that kind of supports this idea that we're providing things honestly. Here's the evidence. You know, it's in the records that we're keeping honest track of things. And, you know, of course, we can think of Zacchaeus would be another one. I don't have it up here, but you know, his record keeping wasn't so good. Okay, and the Lord had to approach him about that. So, you know, we do get the idea that record keeping is important, and simply from the aspect of stewardship, you know, using things and using them well. A good way to know whether we're using things well and whether we're using them to their maximum potential is to have some kind of records to reflect back on. So we can say, you know, how have we been doing in these kinds of things? So it's biblical. And I think the second point we need to, we can't lose sight of is it is actually a legal requirement. You'll notice at the bottom there is a Form 990. And I'll just read what the IRS says here. I thought this was an interesting way that they define it. They tell you what's required, but they don't give you the how, if that makes sense. But they tell you what's required. An exempt organization must keep books and records needed to show that it complies with the tax rules. The organization must be able to document the sources of receipts and expenditures reported on this on its annual return and on any tax returns it must file. That's kind of the definition they put out there. I doubt if maybe one person in here does 990s. You do 990s, I'm assuming. Anybody else do 990s? Oh, you okay. So we have a couple people here. We're not going to get into that. That's over my. I kind of know what they need, but I don't prepare myself. I let other people do that. But let's put it this way. Records are important. The IRS simply says we need evidence of what came in, where it came from, and where it went. In a nutshell, that's what the IRS is saying here. So that's part of the whole requirement thing. Another thing here is the state requirements vary, and we're not going to get into any of this on any detail. There's variation from state to state, but I believe every state, or at least every state that I'm familiar with, has some kind of registration process on an annual basis. Okay, it may vary a little bit, but so there are some state requirements along with the federal, and I just put foreign here with a question mark. I'm not that involved with foreign. I'm involved with a mission in Haiti, and if there's anybody here that can figure out Haitian law on filings, I guess we'd be open. I mean, I've heard of different interpretations, and a lot of people do things differently, and yeah, it's basically a thing of its own. But a little bit later, we'll touch a little bit on the foreign. I'm just curious, do we have people in here that are on foreign, non-U.S. currency that are keeping records? Okay, just one, a couple of you? Okay. So there are some nuances that we have on the foreign that we don't have on the U.S. side that just make it even a bit more difficult. So we'll get into that a little bit here as well. The last thing on the why that I have up here of the record-keeping side is there's some element of public trust. You know, our nonprofit organizations exist because people give us money, okay? And when they give us money, there's a certain element of trust and expectation as the monies are handed over. I have a couple quotes here. The first one is by Stephen Covey. And part of this is just, I think, points out the way mankind thinks in general. We judge ourselves by our intentions and others by their behavior. You know, by virtue of the fact that we understand what our intentions are, if it was just up to our intentions, we wouldn't need a lot of records, okay? We'd all have good intentions. But, you know, we don't necessarily know others or how they do things, and records serve to kind of, show, well, this is what they did. We're no longer going on, you know, well, I wonder what their intentions were for doing this. And the intentions don't necessarily matter as much in record keeping as long as you have accurate records. Also, here's one, and I couldn't find who the author was on this, but trust is a fragile thing, easy to break, easy to lose, and one of the hardest things to ever get back. And that is such a true statement. You probably all know of incidents or where either a ministry or a business or something, or maybe even an individual, where, you know, there was a high level of trust and then something happened and trust eroded, okay? That can happen on the record-keeping side of things, okay? There have been cases where numbers were misrepresented, and I'm not even going to say that it was necessarily by intent, but, you know, There are those cases, and we simply need to guard against that. From a record-keeping system, we should be focused on doing it well, doing it thoroughly, to continue to support that trust. I mean, whole missions and ministries have gone down because of an erosion of trust. And let's not let the number side of that, for sure. That's kind of in our realm. Let's make sure that that's not the case. And even the last one here, considering our donors. When donors hand over money, they trust organizations who are geared toward kind of, how would you say, getting the max return for the dollars they get. I don't know of any mission organizations that say, I have way too much money, or, if I just don't know what to do with my money. It seems all of them find a way to use what the Lord has put there. Now, I would put it this way, that maybe has changed a little bit in the last couple years. There's kind of a phenomena out there where there's been so many donations going to missions that they have to really start being a bit more creative, because the last thing a mission really needs is a big checking or savings account. You obviously want to use the money that the Lord entrusts for His work. You do want to plan for the future, but you don't want to necessarily sit there with a large checking account. So I'm going to just cover a few basics of what I'm going to call record-keeping things, and maybe how to do them and how to do them well and what some of the key things are. You know, at its basics, for most of our nonprofit organizations, it's basically it's money in, it's money out, and how much is available. I mean, that's if you get that part of it right, you've got a very high percentage of the record-keeping side in place, especially for those, I'm going to say, that are in the daily trenches, okay? So the first bullet point I have up there, they do need to be tracked, meaning it's not just money in and money out, and even if it went for a good cause, we have to know the source of it. We have to know where it came from and where it went. And I make a note here, especially in foreign fields, bartering, and I say bartering should be avoided unless there is a value attached and tracked. Bartering is a way of life in many places around the world where things are traded, and that's perfectly fine. That's probably the way things were here before there was a good currency system, and to a certain degree it kind of works. I guess what I'm cautioning us about from a mission standpoint is bartering doesn't lend itself to good transparency or records, okay? If there's bartering, just put a value to it so that we can actually assign a number to it, if that is the case. The second bullet point here, have a source document for everything, okay? Now, those of you on the mission field, that's easy to do, right? They just give you receipts and invoices, is that right? It doesn't work that way in Haiti, and I don't know where you're all at. In the U.S., it's pretty simple. I mean, in the U.S., you need an invoice. You have checks. You use a debit card or pay online. There's transaction records. But you technically need a source document for everything. Just kind of look at it that way. Source document for everything. And, like I said, in the U.S., it's pretty simple. Foreign, I'll say whatever is available. This might not be what the IRS necessarily would prefer, or maybe even the tax preparers prefer, but I know what we do in Haiti. You need some money, you go to the market, you buy some stuff. You left some cash, you brought some food, and there ain't no paper. Is that kind of how it works? Okay? Okay, it's not the U.S. government way of tracking things. The least you can do is make some kind of record-keeping system or your own system that can be... I didn't bring a form or anything. You can make your own. But it should include, the date, the where, the what, the why, and the who. If we have those kinds of records documented, at least we have something to back up where the cash went. Does that make sense? It's more ideal if you have receipts and invoices and checks, but... You know, when you're out on the mission field and you're focusing on food and relationships and all of those things, the last thing those people want to do is go find some place that will give you a receipt. It just doesn't happen in some cultures, okay? But, from an accounting standpoint, just say you need a source document for everything. That's a safe way of looking at it. Just a couple notes here that I want to touch on a little bit from what I'm going to say from the field to the office. And let me put it this way. In the missions that I've been involved with, sometimes there's been some maybe misunderstanding of what's expected, okay? And some of those types of things. It's very important that we have a basic dialogue about expectations of record keeping. And we need to be careful. I need to be careful. I'm one of the weird guys that's kind of wired with money and numbers and everything's in nice straight lines, and I don't deal so well with people. So, you know, I think everything should just be categorized perfectly. You know, quite frankly, most missionaries are not wired that way, and it's a good thing they're not. You know, what would the world be like if they were all like me? But we do need to have some set of dialogue as to what's expected and what can we, you know. The office needs to clearly say, well, this is kind of what we need to be in compliance. The field needs to be able to very much say, look, this is really the way things work out here. And somewhere there, you need to come up with a solution. I'm not here today to tell you what that solution is, partially because every country, every mission, and all those things are different. And the least I'd want to do is get between you and the other people and say, well, this is the way it should be. But it's very important that you have a level of open communication so that the people in the office, and maybe that is you, get what you need, but the people in the field can do their work. Okay? And they both need to work. I will put it this way. My experience with the missions I've been involved with, some of the people who have connected the best in Haiti and elsewhere, they were poor record keepers. I mean, I did some creative math, okay? I prefer not to, but you've never had to do anything like that, have you? Like, you know, reverse calculate into, okay, well, that's probably what it was. Okay, we try to avoid that as much as possible, and we need the people on the field to do that. But, you know, I'll also put it this way. I remember one person we had down there, the records were perfect. I mean, everything came in nice and clean. Things weren't missed. It tied out. It was really a joy for me on my end. But guess what? They didn't connect very well with the people. Okay? Now, I'm not saying there aren't some people out there that are great at both. I would venture to say there's few and far that are really good at doing both. Well, let's just be honest about that. We need the people on the field, and we need a lot of them that are not necessarily good with numbers. We just need to figure out a way to support them well, and have them get to us the things that are needed. And I would put it this way. If you're on a board, or if you have a system in place, I prefer some system where everything's just put in and it takes care of itself. Quite frankly, some systems out on the field, especially where you have a fair amount of turnover in the field, having any kind of complexity there, especially for people who are not numbers-minded or understand accounting terminology, it's not good. Keep it very simple and basic out on the field, okay? It can be very simple things. I don't know. I just threw this line in here. Excel-type ledgers, it doesn't have to be Excel spreadsheets, whatever. It can work very well as long as you kind of have a system documented, here's how we keep our records. I would much rather see you working with people in the field where you've got a very simple system that's easy to use, and then when it comes into the office, we kind of figure out how to do it, rather than try and export something that's cloud-based and has a lot of hoops to jump through, and at the end of the day, it just doesn't work well, and about the time somebody learns to use it, it's time for them to leave and somebody else comes to the field. That's not fun for either side of that equation. So I would put it this way, keep things simple for the people out in the field. I just have a few things here that I'm going to call accounting speak. And these are just some terms, which part of the outline said that we're going to provide some easy to understand definitions, and I'm going to try my best to. And these are very, very basic terms, but things that I've seen that sometimes get mixed up. You know, here's a couple terms, for instance, expenses versus capital expenses or projects, or some people just call them CapEx, okay? It's all money out. So if you're in the field and you get money and you spend money, some of it goes for expenses and some of it is more project driven, or what in the accounting world may be called capital expenditures or investment in capital things. So I want to discuss just a little bit. Expenses, at least the way most people would understand expenses, are typically the normal ongoing outlays of cash to support the basic work of the ministry. And that could be whatever the ministry does. Those are what are typically called expenses. And, you know, you think of things like food, shelter, transportation, communication. We're not talking the vehicle transportation, but the gas, the tickets, those kinds of things. Whatever is needed for transportation, those are all expenses. CapEx or projects or whatever the terminology is that your mission may use, those are more like defined as typical bigger cost items, projects for a specific period of time or with some specific end goal in mind. So, you know, when you're communicating to people in the field or they're communicating with you, it's very important that you designate what's kind of the ongoing expenses versus what are more the, I'm going to call them projects out here. Usually projects isn't the accounting term that's used, but the difference here is a lot of your bigger projects get depreciated, the other things just get written off as you go. And so that's the reason that those need to be kept separate. It's all money going out the door, you're spending it, but there are tracking differences, and we're not going to get into the depreciation, how to do depreciation, but basically to just understand that they need to be kept separately. Does that make sense? Kind of following that? I do have a couple examples, I think. Yeah, like a building project, new vehicle, equipment, those types of things. And like I pointed out, you have to be able, in your record-keeping system, to identify those differently. For the system that we're using in Haiti, it's a little tough to always explain what it is. And so we kind of have a column that basically is projects, and they have to put what definition. So it's kind of the normal school stuff here and the normal transportation, the normal, you know, we have columns in a spreadsheet for that. Then there's kind of the other, and, you know, is it labor, is it material, and kind of what is the project? And, you know, we're not trying to make accountants of them. When it comes in, then I have to kind of figure out, well, which ones go together and how do we account for it? But that's okay. I can do that in the office with a few notes. And, you know, I'm not going to be here today and tell you in your mission you need to count these this way and the others this way. That's kind of, every mission may have their own little way of doing it. You know, the IRS puts out some guidelines from a tax standpoint, which even for nonprofit organizations, they kind of follow the same thing, although I believe I'm right when I say most nonprofit organizations just use a straight line depreciation for the 990, right? So, technical difference there. We're not going to get into that. Accounting speak. I do want to talk about budgeting just a little bit. Budgeting is, whether it's personal, business, nonprofits, I'm a strong proponent of budgeting. I think budgeting is very powerful. It has the same effect no matter where it is. And this is a little bit of a definition. It's a planned amount of cash, and I'm specifically saying cash here, that is designated for a specific expense or project for a future period of time. Budgets are always forward-looking. It's a plan. Somebody needs to take ownership of that process. I don't know if it's you, if it's somebody on the board, but it is very important that you do have budgets. Not every mission does, not every business does, but budgets are so powerful. Budgets have this effect of, at least we now have a plan. I think I touch on that. Oh, let me just, before I get there. Thinking about budgets. Typically, I like to see budgets that are done annually. You kind of think of a whole year, and then you break them down into these 12 columns, because that's the way most of our records are kept, is on a monthly basis. I personally like to start annually and then break it down. rather than start by the month and do an add them up. That's not wrong if you do it the other way, but I really do like the annual, and then you kind of break it down. I'm going to follow my points so I don't get ahead of myself. By doing budgets, there is this freeing expectation that everybody knows what to understand. And when you look at it this way, those in charge of securing funds, which somebody has to do in every organization, somebody has to kind of say, well, we need to have the money keep coming in. A few of you said you're on boards. That kind of falls on boards a lot of times to say, you know, are we making sure money's coming in? By setting a budget, a board kind of understands, well, what's coming in, what have we been getting, where has it been coming from, can we anticipate that for the future, how much of it should we be putting in the budget so we can operate. It also has the same effect for those, I'm going to call it, in the field, and those using the funds. They understand what the constraints are under which to operate. By having a budget, it's very freeing because you know you have this much money to kind of plan to use for things. So budgets are very powerful. And if you don't have a budget in the organization you're a part of, I really think you should strongly consider one. I like to look at budgets where budgets are built for the expenses. And if you think about expenses as we defined them a little bit ago, the ongoing, you know, the stuff you need every month type of stuff, where the expense budgets do not vary greatly from year to year. That's the best way to kind of run an ongoing missions organization, where there's not a lot of change. If there's more money and you have a very specific purpose for it, yes, you expect those things and they should be budgeted. I like to see where, you know, you kind of set an expense budget and then you have maybe a separate budget for bigger projects, CapEx projects. That's even good from a getting funds standpoint. Sometimes people are passionate about helping to cover certain things. And I only say this to say, I look at budgeting and I say budgeting is really quite simple. Budget is nothing more than looking at the history, saying what's the trend we're on, and then what deliberate changes do we anticipate. It's nothing more than history plus or minus deliberate changes equals the budget for the coming year. Don't overthink it.
Do you have any comment about the oncoming inflation and what that should do to your budget for next year?
I'm trying to think, I know it crossed my mind. It's a very good thing. I'm glad you brought it up. Obviously, expenses are going up. Wages are going up. I would hope giving goes up. That's my short spiel, but, you know, I don't know if that will hold true or not, but, you know, inflation, I'm old enough, I guess, to say that I kind of remember the late 70s, early 80s and some of those things. And it just establishes new norms. We're going through an awkward phase right now where things are somewhat out of balance. And if the Lord tarries, there will become a new norm at some point. We're probably not quite there yet. And so there, but, you know, I'm confident that in the end, costs will go up. Income should follow. People make more. Yeah, I guess I do say inflationary effect there. You know, your budget, if it was, you know, $100,000 last year, you know, you can kind of, for expenses, you can probably figure it's going to cost maybe $110 this year. You know, it's not like it's going to cost $200 typically. You know, you kind of expect some kind of increase there. This, things needing to be in balance, this is something that some people sometimes struggle with, you know. This basically means that every penny is accounted for and all debits are equal to all credits. I'm not going to get into the whole debits and credits side of things. A lot of software kind of does a lot of that in the background. I was blessed to learn accounting before computers, and so I actually had to learn some of this stuff and how it really works in the background. But thinking about being in balance, if you're accountable for a certain chunk of money, or somebody in the field is accountable for a certain chunk of money, you really do need to account for every penny. That may sound like you're a little tight or something, and I don't mean it from a you got to be really tough standpoint, but, you know, the issue is that things won't balance if you don't. Every penny has to be accounted for. In fact, as my second bullet point there, accounting systems are unforgiving. They're built on this principle that assets equals liability plus equity. In the case of nonprofits, it's net assets. But that's a fundamental basic upon which all accounting systems work. And record keeping is nothing more than keeping track of transactions that hit an accounting system somewhere. And that accounting system is totally unforgiving. If you don't have assets, or if you don't have debits and credits that equal each other, it don't work. Okay? And so that's why it's very important that every penny is accounted for. If you don't account for every penny, then people like in my seat have to say, okay, how do I make it come out? Okay? But I have had cases where somebody on the field has spent hours trying to figure out why they were off by a few bucks. And, you know, at the end of the day, I said, look, do the best you can. Put a note with it and send it to me. Okay? I'm okay with that. The IRS probably wouldn't necessarily say that's the way to do it, but let's be practical. It's not worth having somebody in the field spend hours to find a $10 mistake. Okay? So I hope if you're a board member or somebody back at the office, you're not exerting that level of got to be down to the penny type of thing. But I also will say, if you're in the field, try to be diligent, keep track of things, and make it come out. Just a couple quick definitions here. These are just definitions. The term chart of accounts basically means the list of all the different folders where the expenses are kept. And I've seen things messed up, so I'm specifically saying it's not a list of donors or vendors or items. Those are tracked separately. I've seen records that basically said, you know, money, this GL was money paid to John, and this was money paid to Joe, and this was for, you know, for vegetables at the market. We don't get to that level. We shouldn't be building our chart of accounts on that level, if that makes sense. But it's a list of accounts that maybe has, you know, the basics, I would put it. And a general ledgers or journals, that's nothing more than a record-keeping system of transactions. And those vary from system to system. The key word up here is double entry. And the double entry is just this idea that everything needs to be in balance. It doesn't mean you have to, depending on your system, you don't have to write it twice. In fact, most of our software systems today, you don't even have to think double entry because it knows half of it in the background. Okay? But just know that things have to tie out. Talk just a little bit about accrual basis accounting. A lot of our missions, basically, it's money in, money out. It is, you know, how I would put it this way. As much as possible, especially in business, I just think there's no good way to run a business other than accrual. From a business standpoint, it's not like it has to be that way for business or for missions necessarily. In fact, is a lot of taxes are filed on 990s are filed on a cash basis simply because there aren't good accrual records. Is that accurate? But to the extent that you have a system that tracks accrual, what that basically means is you're recording your receipts and your expenses immaterial of when they're paid. That's basically what that term means. My last point here is simply doing petty cash well. I think most of our organizations have some kind of, I'm going to call it, petty cash system, where there's either a bag or a box with some money out in the field. And I want to just walk through, what do you do to do that part of it well? First of all, establish whatever value that needs to be. I personally think it should be enough that you're not having to replenish it, for sure not daily and probably not weekly, maybe monthly, and hopefully you're not running a whole bunch of stuff through there, but that's the first point. The second point here, no money ever leaves the box or the bag without a receipt or a note. Surely that wouldn't happen, right? We need some money to go do stuff, we put it in our pocket, we go do things. Missionaries do that, and bless them for their work, but in reality, don't take money out without putting something in the box. The something can simply be a note. I'm trying to think of my next... When cash is removed for an unknown requirement, in other words, you don't know for sure how much you need, but you need some money to go chase after some stuff. When that happens, you know, you should at least have a note that has the date, the person, the amount, and some general description. So at least you know why the money's gone from the box. Because the sum of all monies needs to equal sum of all monies plus all receipts plus all these little notes still needs to always equal the same amount of money. Okay? If that makes sense. That's how you balance petty cash. And as soon as possible, the note needs to be replaced with a receipt and change that so that the original, you know, so you have a transaction that's in there. And then all the transactions of money in and money out are recorded in some kind of journal. Spreadsheets work good for this, okay? And then the last thing that happens is periodically, whatever you kind of work out, the receipts within the box are exchanged for a new supply of cash, and then you start a new journal. That's how you do petty cash, and you do it well. You know, you run it, you turn in your receipts, you get some cash, and you start over. The dollar amount is always the same. I'm not going to spend much time on this. Just know that if you're a U.S.-based business, the filings need to be done in U.S. dollars, and that's how the official records need to be kept. There is an issue when you're dealing with foreign currency, and I've had this happen. Some currency you get with one exchange, some with a different exchange. They all hit the same records. By the time you do the calculations here and then you reverse calculate, you can be off a little bit. It's very possible. The best exchange rate is not what they tell you the exchange rate is. It's actually I turned so many U.S. dollars in and I got so many pesos or goods or whatever it is that you're getting. That's the real exchange rate that you should be using. And I guess I'm only saying minimal rounding is fine. Don't sweat the small stuff if you need to deal with foreign currency. We have just a couple minutes left here. I would love to entertain a few questions.
In QuickBooks, it's mm-hmm. easy on the reports to switch between accrual and cash just with a button up there.
Yep.
Is it fine just for the purposes of the report you're running, just to switch between them? Just because I want, in certain situations, I want to see what accrual looks like, in other situations, I want to look like cash. I mean, it's not like we're actually keeping books one way or the other necessarily.
Yeah, QuickBooks does a good job of allowing both, and all it's really doing in those cases, it's taking the payment or the date of the receipting and looking at it on a different set of books rather than on the date of receipt versus paid. I mean, yeah, I personally like it's basically AP and AR are removed and reverse calculated on the cash side. One's not right and one's wrong. From a business standpoint, I have a very strong preference on accrual because it shows the real picture, and I like it on missions when possible, but I don't view missions as near as critical as business. Good question, though. Anybody else?
So you said about being in Haiti. Do you do the QuickBooks thing in Haiti and
transfer? We tried, and it was a disaster. We use QuickBooks on the U.S. We use a spreadsheet down there. At the top, I've got a formula, money in, goods receipt, you know, U.S. dollars converted to goods, and it does the math for me by reverse calculating. It seems to work well. They keep track of everything in goods, except at the top, the money that goes down and what it was converted to. They think goods. And so then I just convert it back to U.S. dollars. Once a month, I simply post it in. It's one entry.
One mission is that?
What's that?
What mission are you
on? Haitian Relief and Missions, HRM. It's a simple way of doing it. Let's put it that way. Is it the best? I'm not going to say. I have found that people find that spreadsheet fairly easy to use compared to understanding a lot of other things. Okay, any other questions?
Would you know, like the income that missionaries get, does that need to be filed as income, or do they get a tax exam?
I can tell you how we treat it. I don't know that it's the perfect answer. We have experts in here, I think. But I'm of the understanding if it's a U.S. citizen being funded from a U.S. organization that it is subject to the U.S. regulations as far as income is concerned. We treat it as such through a 1099, not payroll, though, and I'm not even going to say that that's perfect.
Okay.
I'm open.
Yeah, the other part of that is given by the FR as an individual. Mm-hmm. Your individual is going to be required to do that FR as well.
Do you know if when you're deciding if an expense is a capital expense or an operating expense for a nonprofit in the U.S., does the IRS or anybody actually care which way you categorize it?
I would say the IRS cares. Will they put a lot of scrutiny and effort behind it to go audit it? Probably not, because there's no money there. But to do it and to do it well, I do think. Now, does that mean if it's $500 you do or you don't? Maybe not. Here's another thing I guess I look at and what I process a bit is sometimes we do things that are more capital in nature in foreign worlds where we don't even have title to it, and therefore it does not represent a future real value as we normally think of assets. So I think there's a little bit of gray in that area. But again, it's a little over my league to give you an exact answer on that. Okay, I think we'll turn the time over to you again.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from REACH 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from REACH or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.